Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Acts, where we've been following the expelling of Paul and Barnabas from Antioch. And as we continue today with part one of You Can't Keep God's Man Down, we follow the apostles to the city of Iconium, where they once again boldly preach the gospel to a divided group of listeners. So let's follow along as we pick up in Acts chapter 14, verse 1, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So as we come to the 14th chapter here in the Acts of the Apostles, we are continuing to follow Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey. And in our study last time, we saw how they had come to Pisidian Antioch and how they had preached in the synagogue there. And there was sort of a mixed reception coming from the Jewish element in the synagogue, but the Gentiles who were there in the synagogue, they begged that the apostles might preach these words to them again. And so the following Sabbath day, the whole city was gathered together to hear the message. And this caused the Jews to become envious. And so they stirred up the people and basically they raised up a persecution against Barnabas and Paul, and they expelled them from their city. So they drove them out of town, basically. And as they left, they shook the dust from off of their feet, and they just carried on with their business, rejoicing as they went, and they came to Iconium. Now, Iconium was about a 90-mile journey from Antioch. And so they traveled, obviously, for quite some time, traveling by foot. But they come now to Iconium. And it says that they went together to the synagogue of the Jews and so spoke that a great multitude, both of the Jews and of the Greeks, believed. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brethren. Therefore, they stayed there a long time, speaking boldly in the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands. But the multitude of the city was divided, part sided with the Jews and part with the apostles. So, you know, you look at this situation here as they're traveling along in their missionary journey. And here are two men, and I'm sure there were probably others that were tagging along with them at this point. But what are they doing? They're going from city to city, and they're proclaiming the good news. They're going about telling people about the love of God for them and about the great sacrifice of Jesus Christ and about what God has done to save them from eternal damnation. And yet as they go about bringing the good news to people or seeking to bring the good news to people, they're finding that there's opposition wherever they go. You know, that's still true today. And yet I think that sometimes we forget that that is really the case. But for as many people as are going to listen to the gospel, there's just as many or more that are going to oppose it. They're going to resist it and they're going to come against it. And yet that's no reason to stop preaching it. You see, these guys didn't stop preaching because of the harassment. They actually were more determined by the opposition. And so we read here that where it says the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brethren. Therefore, they stayed there a long time. You would think that they would have gotten out of town because after all, they've stirred up the people against us and they're attacking us. But yet Paul and Barnabas were brave men. And as the opposition came, rather than running from the opposition, they just dug in their heels and they said, no, we've got to stay and we have got to help these young Christians to get established. And they did do that. And not only did they help them get established in the faith, but they set a glorious example for them to be bold and courageous when it comes to the ministry of the gospel. And that's what it takes to be a Christian, really. It takes courage. It takes boldness. And I think we're going to find that more and more as time goes on. A lot of other people in the world have found that out already. A lot of people have been living under adverse circumstances because of their faith. And yet we haven't had so much of that. We've had little bits of it here and there, of course. But it could be that things will intensify more and more as time goes on. And we've got to be courageous. We've got to be bold. And we can't be discouraged or detoured from our task simply because opposition comes to us. When I was living in London, we were going out on the streets and doing evangelism on the streets, and many times we were harassed when we went out. And one time we were actually attacked physically, and it was a pretty hostile situation. It was violent, and the Lord protected us for the most part. We got a few cuts and bruises and things, but nothing real serious. But when we regrouped and we got together, there was all this sort of confusion in our minds as to why did that happen? And did we not pray enough? Or were we somehow out of God's will? Did we maybe, show up at the wrong place at the wrong time? Or, all these kinds of things go through your thinking process and you're reevaluating what you're doing. Because I think a lot of times we forget that there is a real battle going on, that there's a real warfare, that there is real opposition to the gospel. And we shouldn't forget it because the pages of the New Testament are full of it. And as we go through this history here, this is what we're seeing. We're seeing opposition wherever these guys go. But yet we're also seeing, as I said, their courage and their boldness. So they're sticking with the disciples in Iconium. They're ministering to them. And God is working in the midst of this hostile environment. He's working in an extraordinary manner. And signs and wonders are being accomplished through the apostles at this time. But there was a division in the city. Part of the city sided with the Jews who were opposing the apostolic message, and yet part of the city sided with the apostles. They were embracing their message, and they saw that it was a good message. And when a violent attempt was made by both the Gentiles and Jews with their rulers to abuse and stone them, they became aware of it, and they fled to Lystra and Derbe, cities of Lycaonia, and to the surrounding region, and they were preaching the gospel there. So they were bold men, they were courageous men, but they weren't stupid men. They knew when it was time to get out of town. They had realized at a certain point that, okay, it's no longer wise to be in this situation. We need to get out of here, because, of course, getting killed isn't going to do anybody any good at this point. They're supposed to be spreading the gospel. So recognizing that things are becoming too intense and that there's a plot brewing to kill them, basically, to stone them. Now, stoning was, in that day, what lynching would have been, back 100 years ago or so in our culture here. And they happened to do it with stones, and that's what they were planning to do. But word came to them, and so they fled. And they went about a 20-mile journey to Lystra, and then Derbe was a neighboring a city in the area of Lycaonia. Now in Lystra, a certain man without strength in his feet was sitting, a cripple from his mother's womb who had never walked. So they've come to Lystra. We don't know how much time they've spent there before they get to the preaching, but now they begin to preach the gospel. Lystra was on the outskirts of civilization, so to speak. And so it would have been a pretty, you know, rugged place. And it's another thing we see about these guys. They went to the rugged places. They didn't just go to, you know, cultural centers where everybody was sophisticated and civilized and you didn't have to worry about any kind of opposition. They went to the outskirts. They went to the places where there wasn't a whole lot of law and order. They went to the places where you could easily get yourself in trouble and not necessarily easily get out of it. And, you know, one commentator I was reading who's somewhat of a sophisticated person, very proper and all, and, you know, he was sort of pondering the whole thing about them going to this place. And he himself, as a commentator, was asking, well, I wonder why they went to this place. And I almost got the impression that if he was determining the outreach, he would have skipped it because it wasn't civilized enough. But, you know, the simple answer is they went to this place because the people needed Christ. They didn't sit around and, you know, discuss whether or not the people were civilized enough so they wouldn't be under any threat or anything. They went because the people needed the Lord. And that's that missionary spirit that the apostles had. And that's that great spirit that we've talked about before, and seeing people going out and taking risk and just not really being concerned for their own welfare necessarily, but just saying, we've got to get the gospel to these people. I pray that God would give us that kind of heart. I pray that God would give me that kind of heart. And so here they are, they're in Lystra, they're preaching, and here's this man. He's been crippled from birth. He's never walked. And this man heard Paul speaking. And Paul, observing him intently and seeing that he had faith to be healed, said with a loud voice, "Stand up straight on your feet." And he leaped and he walked. Now, how is it that Paul discerned this? I think it was exactly that. It was the discerning power of the Holy Spirit upon Paul as he was preaching. He sees this man and God is speaking to him that this man can be healed. And so Paul calls him out and he's healed instantly. Now, when the people saw what Paul had done, they raised their voices saying in the Lycaonian language, "The gods have come down to us in the likeness of men." And Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul they called Hermes because he was the chief speaker. Now, here's an interesting bit of background information. In this particular region, there was a legend that at one time, the gods had come to visit. These two gods, Zeus and Hermes, had come at one time to visit, but they were not received by the general population. But as the legend goes, there was an elderly couple that received them and treated them kindly. And in the end, they destroyed the entire population that had refused to welcome them. And they blessed this particular couple by making them permanent pillars, you know, turning them into trees or something to that effect. And this, you know, this was part of the mythology, part of the belief of this superstitious, idolatrous community. And so what you see happening here is this miracle takes place and the people are thinking, oh my, the gods, they've come to visit us again. And Barnabas was probably a good-looking man and impressive stature, and so they determined he must be Zeus. And Paul, because he was the one that was speaking, Hermes was the, in the Greek mythology, he was the sort of the mouthpiece for Zeus. If you would translate that into the Roman deities, it would have been Jupiter and Mercury. But this was actually a city that was predominantly Greek. So Zeus and Hermes. So that's what they concluded. They concluded that the gods had come down to us in the likeness of men. And so the priest of Zeus, whose temple was in front of their city, brought oxen and garlands to the gates, intending to sacrifice with the multitude. Now, notice that they cried out in the Lycaonian language. Evidently, the apostles didn't really know what was going on. But all of a sudden, they are being treated as deity. They're being hailed as the gods. They don't know the language, so they don't necessarily know what's being said. But before they know it, the people are gathering around. The priest from the temple has come, and now they're about to offer sacrifices to them. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard this, so evidently they found out through some means what was going on, they tore their clothes and ran in among the multitude crying out. Now, tearing their clothes, that was an exclusively Jewish practice. And it was a sign of grief. It was a sign of, you know, just a deep expression of their disapproval of what they were doing in tearing their clothes. Because you see, they were being hailed as gods. And to the Jew, that was not merely a misconception, but it was a blasphemous thing. And so they're expressing their disapproval of what they're doing by tearing their clothes and running in among the multitude, crying out and saying, "Men, why are you doing these things? We also are men with the same nature as you, and preach to you that you should turn from these useless things to the living God." So notice the boldness of the apostles here. First of all, they seek to correct them. We're just men. But then they say, "We're trying to get you to turn from these useless things." That's not a very nice way to refer to their religion, but it was a very accurate way to refer to it. And you know, sometimes we need to not worry about being so nice. Obviously, we want to use tact, we want to use wisdom, but not to the point where we don't call things like they are. And I think today there's a lot of pressure in the culture, and there's a lot of pressure on Christians to sort of downplay the differences in religion and to just sort of agree that every religion has its, you know, valid points, and every religion has some element to it that is acceptable and good, and so on and so forth. And yet there comes a point where we have to just call it like it is. And that's what they did here. That's what Paul did. And that's what some are doing today. And I applaud those that are doing that. Franklin Graham did that not too long ago. And he's been, you know, criticized ever since. I was reading an article the other night where he's wanting and poised really to go into Iraq and to help with the relief effort and all of that. And, you know, not only are some of the Muslim leaders very hostile to him suggesting that he would even do that, because after all, he's the one who stood up and said the Islamic religion is an evil religion. It's not a religion of peace. And so they're all up in arms. But there are Christian leaders standing up as well. And they're saying, "Oh, well, you know, he probably shouldn't go in. He's not the one to send in because, you know, we need to send somebody in that's more politically correct," is basically what they're hinting at. But I like the way he ended the interview. He said, "I'm not being sent by the United States government. And I'm not going to be withheld by the United States government. I'm being sent by the Lord, and I'm going." And so God bless him as he goes. But, you know, he's taken a bold stand. And there comes a place where we have to do that, because they are useless things. And not only are they useless things, but they're damning things. These religions aren't neutral. It's not like, you know, if you believe this, it's just not going to be a good thing for you to believe, in the sense that it's not going to bring you some great benefit in life. It's more serious than that. If you believe this, it's going to destroy your soul eternally. And so it's beyond useless. It's damning. And so he calls them to turn away from their idolatry and to turn to the living God who made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all things that are in them, who in bygone generations allowed all nations to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, he did not leave himself without witness, in that he did good, gave us rain from heaven, and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. And with these sayings, they could scarcely restrain the multitude from sacrificing to them. So they finally were able to convince them, but it wasn't easy, not to sacrifice to them. But I want you to notice something here. Paul's message here is a message that's considerably different in one sense than the message that he had given in the synagogue. In our previous study, we looked at the message that he gave in the synagogue, and it was a message firmly rooted in the scriptures. He took them through the scriptures, of course, because that was their point of reference as Jews and as proselytes. But here he's talking to people who have no scriptural point of reference. And not to say that he didn't bring in the scriptures or he didn't, you know, bring in the gospel. Of course he did. But he uses a point of reference that they would have been able to embrace themselves. It was the point of creation itself. And creation is an excellent point of reference. And sometimes we're dealing with people who have absolutely no biblical background whatsoever. They know nothing about the Bible, zip, period. Even in our own Christian America, there are lots of people that know nothing about the Bible. I was talking to a guy a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the Christianity 101 class, and then I was talking about how when I first became a Christian and came to church here, I didn't know a whole lot about anything. You know, it was a learning experience. But I did have some background because having grown up in a Catholic environment, at least I knew the Bible characters and so forth. And he said to me, he said, yeah, you know, for the first few months when I was at the church and Pastor Chuck was talking about Abraham, I kept asking myself, now why does he talk about Abraham Lincoln all the time? He couldn't quite figure out how Abraham Lincoln fit into the biblical history. And he finally discovered eventually that he didn't. It wasn't Abraham Lincoln that he was talking about. But you know, I mean, this guy lived in Orange County. And so, you know, we tend to take it for granted. We think, oh, people know this stuff. People don't know this stuff. And these people didn't know anything about any of this. And so Paul, he begins to speak to them where they could relate and identify. He speaks to them about the God who created everything, about the God who providentially had been blessing them and taking care of them and showing them kindness, even though they were living in idolatry. And creation is a good starting point if you end up with somebody that just doesn't have the slightest clue about anything else. It's a good place to start. I mentioned this book a few weeks ago, The Headhunters, a book I'm reading about a couple of missionaries who went down to the jungles of Ecuador and reached out to the Ashura people. And that was their foot in the door, was that the Ashuras, they believed in a creator. They believed that there was some great God somewhere who made everything. And so when the missionaries came and they said, we want to tell you about the God who made everything. Oh, they said, we'd like to hear about him. We have at least the concept that there is such a being, but we know nothing about him. And that was sort of the foot in the door. And so I think here with Paul, we learn that in speaking to other people, what we need to do is look for that entrance into their life, that entrance into their heart. We need to seek that way in. And sometimes it can be through, you know, again, the scriptures can go right in. Sometimes you might refer to something like creation. Sometimes it might even be your own personal experience, your own testimony, your own background that God would use to open the door and pave the way for you to begin to lay out the gospel. And of course, that's where everything has to go. If we just talk to people about creation and let them know there's a creator, then we haven't done them the kind of service that we need to do, because they need to know that the Creator is also the Redeemer. because that's where connection with the Creator happens, when we understand redemption. And so Paul sets a good example for us.
We'll continue with more of our study through the book of Acts in our next lesson, as we find the Apostle Paul being stoned for his preaching of the gospel. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled, "You Can't Keep God's Man Down." Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT-3125. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts and vodcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.